Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
The celebration is on. It's still theirs until someone rips it out of their hands.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast. You're listening to this 24 hours ahead of the 2025 PLL Championship game between the top seeds of the East and West conferences. That's right, it's the New York Atlas coming up against the Denver Outlaws at Sports Illustrated Stadium in Harrison, New Jersey. Chris Rosenthal and I both recorded a series of interviews during the PLL Championship Media Day where we got head coach Mike Pressler topping off in Defenseman of the Year, Gavin Adler giving yet another 10 out of 10 interview. Just wait until you hear what he listens to before games. We got that. We've got much more from 2024 MVP Jeff Teat and his new role off the field in the PLL and how he gels with his teammates. From even some rookies, some rookie midfielders. So stay tuned for that in this episode. And for the Denver Outlaws in the second half of the podcast, make sure to listen to some earnest answers from some former Terps, whether it's defenseman Jesse Bernhardt, rookie goalie Logan McNaney, midseason pickup Jonathan Donville. This is a podcast you're going to want to listen to get ready for the championship game. And Rosie and I have got it all for you right here.
We now welcome on Atlas head coach Mike Pressler onto the show. Now, Coach Pressler, first pro title game here. How are you feeling?
Just a great regular season for our guys. Way to get it done in the semis. Could not be, more proud of it. The team in blue right now, and thrilled for this opportunity to come kind of, we were talking a second ago, closer to home. I grew up in the Northeast, a lot of Duke alums coming to the game, a lot of Bryan alums coming to the game, so a lot of people from Connecticut are going to make the journey down to see us, really excited for the weekend.
What's that mean to you, Coach Pressler? Because I've talked to DeShelly about it throughout the season here. He and pretty much all of your players that have played under you have called you just the most loyal coach, the most supportive coach there is. When things are going good, of course, just how do you size up the impact you've had on so many people ready to come support you on Sunday, and two, just being able to kind of touch different levels of lacrosse, like we were talking before the pod here with high school, club, and pro here?
Well, I think the big thing about our sport, I've learned over the years, it's a relationship business. And, coaching for me is a lifelong passion. It's something I've always wanted to do. I figured that out in high school, whether it was going to be football, which probably I was better at than lacrosse as a player. But to coach men's lacrosse for over 40 plus years at every level, and all the people and young men that you meet, and just developing those relationships. And in those relationships, things like loyalty, trust, having their back, and being with them and for them, especially when they face adversity. And I think that's been a big part of our journey. My wife Susan, our family, all of that with all these particular stops from VMI to Ohio Wesleyan to Duke to Bryant to Highland Park to Texas Nationals and now, to the pros. And even though these are the greatest players on the planet, you still got to be able to earn their trust and their support. And we got a terrific locker room. I learned that in year one, 3 years ago. You win the locker room, you got a great chance to win the game.
Coach B, you've got some great relationships with, you mentioned it, the locker room on this New York Atlas team. Tell me a little bit about your captains. Danny Logan first. Just what he epitomizes for this team, both with his performances and kind of his locker room.
I've coached a lot of tough guys. And, physical toughness, I think, is the easy part of this game. I'm not sure I've ever met a man that is more mentally and emotionally tougher than Danny Logan. And then you throw the physical part in. He's got all three. And he is a consummate leader, so selfless, you know, puts everybody and anything above and beyond him. A great, great guy, just a great all-around guy, a guy you want to be best friends with, but, you know, he's like a follow-me guy. You know, that's what he is to me, follow me. And he does it without saying a whole lot. It's through his play, his attitude, his support. And I'm not sure there's a finer captain at any level that I've ever met than Danny Logan.
And as of this podcast, this time recording, still reigning MVP in Jeff Teat, 2024 MVP coming into this game, 40 points in the season, great semifinal display. What does he bring to this team?
You know, Jeff is so different in so many ways and so many other great captains I have. By nature, Jeff is a very reserved, very soft-spoken, doesn't say a whole lot, and that's who he is. And, you know, I've had some incredible captains that have been kind of like quiet assassins. And this guy is his will to win. You know, you mentioned all his accolades and all the records and all that. I mean, for him, he hates even talking about it. It's all about one thing, winning and winning a PLL championship. All that other stuff he can throw out the window. And for us, having, you know, Jeff kind of at the offensive end, Danny in the defensive end, and we're going to get to Trevor in the second, in the middle, we have some balance in the leadership by position, which really, really helps us too.
And you mentioned Baptiste there, just from him being on this team, the last original member of that 2019 Atlas roster, just what would it mean to do this for him?
I mean, you saw after the semis. I mean, my emotion was for the older guys in particular, but especially Trevor. You know, one of our founding fathers. I call him George Washington. Like, he is the founding father for the Atlas and been there from the beginning. And as I've gotten really to know Trev over the last 3 years, you know, just to create personal friendship. I mean, our friendship, you know, I don't make a move without, in anything, the team, the draft, without Trevor's counsel. I need his opinion. He doesn't necessarily offer it, but I want to have it before I make any move. And I said before, kind of back to us, like, our formula here with the Atlas has been the captains run the show. Brooksy, Sino, and I, we guide the show. We guide them.
Especially more in the pro level.
In the pro level. You know, it's their team. It's not my team. I'm the caretaker. It's their team. They run the team. The pregame talk, the halftime, postgame, they run the group, myself, Sino on defense, Brooksy on offense, we guide the show.
How different is that from your approach from year one?
180. Yeah. I mean, what I've learned, and this is like anti-me, like the less I say, the less I do, the better off. And by nature, I'm a guy that wants to do more. You can't be outworked. You can't be outprepared. In year one, I wasn't listening. I became a good listener after we went 2-8. A really good listener. And each year, you know, a better listener, less, more from them, and it works.
Coach Pressler, tale of two halves, the time you guys played the Denver Outlaws in the regular season. What did you learn from that game that you'll take to the title game on Sunday?
Well, I mean, obviously, a really, really, I mean, there's no secret here. 8 teams in the league, the 2 best teams are in the final. I mean, the records prove that. They have a great balance. I mean, they're very similar to us. They're really good in the middle. I mean, Wehrman is a very good face-off guy. Has battled Trev in the past. You know, the rookie and the goal for them, who's been terrific. You know, we've had the same thing with Liam. So they're really good in the middle, too. You know, they got some big physical athletes at the offensive end. really, really much better balance, I think, this year for them than last year between the attack and the midfield. They're not so one-sided like maybe they've been in the past. You know, Mike Manley, I'm a huge fan of, former Blue Devil. Actually, I recruited to Duke when he was in ninth grade. Never got the chance to coach him, but just an, always a huge fan of Mike Manley and their guys. And Tim Sudan is a really good buddy. Really, really respect the heck out of Tim. Great coach, great man. Doesn't overcoach him either. You know, so I kind of learned that a little bit from Tim. He's been a great mentor for me in the league. You know, over the last couple years, I could talk to him, bounce things off of him. He's been great by me that way. So why would you think this is not going to be another one-goal game, right? For 48 full. I thought the last time, you know, we didn't have Brett Makar in the lineup. He was coming off the concussion the week prior. Hugh Kelleher wasn't in the lineup. So those would be two additions for us that weren't in the game last time that I think that will certainly give us a boost. But it's, you know, they talk about, you know, the media talks about the best game all year was the regular season game between the Outlaws and the Atlas. Why wouldn't this even be better? Who knows?
Great matchup. Great coaching matchup. You know, Coach, Rosie shows up late. We got to get him a question in here. Rose, get in here and give us a question into the mic.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you asked so far. That'll make it more interesting.
All right, perfect. See if you can read my mind. All right. One last question.
One question for you. Could you please tell me, Coach, what is it like having Steven Brooks working beside you, and what kind of offensive mind does he bring to the table?
Well, the second part of that, Rosie, is that he's a brilliant offensive mind. Nobody understands the pro game better offensively, former player and a great coach, than Brooksy. He teaches me stuff every week about the pro game. And the best part about Brooksy, he keeps me loose. Like he is, you know, he knows everybody. He's the Pied Piper. You can't walk 10 feet. He's not talking to somebody. Just that incredibly, you know, gifted personality to him. And I'm a highly tense individual by nature. I gotta like loosen up a little bit. And Brooksy's job is to keep me loose. And he does a phenomenal job at that. And, but, you know, Steven has been, you know, year three for me. He has been a huge part of our success, not only at the offensive end, but player personnel decisions, the draft. And he knows everybody in the league that I don't know. And, you know, he's a great guy at getting opinions about certain things from players and people that we know and trust. And so he, assistant coach of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
That should be a position. I think that should be an award. We'll see if we can float that by the committee and get that on the list.
I got my nominee.
So. Excellent. Well, thank you for the time. I'm going to hand it back off to Kevin.
Thank you. Thanks, Rosie.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry for getting here late.
Coach Presser, good luck tomorrow. Good luck. Listeners will be hearing this on Saturday, so good luck tomorrow in the championship game, and thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate you.
We are now joined by New York Atlas close defenseman Gavin Adler, head of the 2025 PLL championship game. Gavin, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Excited to be on.
Gavin, we're going to need you to lean into the mic a little bit here.
Yeah, excited to be back. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Close quarters here at the IL HQ at PLL Championship Media Day. Gavin, you had one of the most electric PLL Happy Hour podcast appearances last summer. You were fiery. We have been rooting for you ever since.
Make that helps.
So, how do you plan to use this podcast appearance to fuel your championship game performance?
Yeah, I mean, you get better with reps, and hopefully just better on-the-spot answers to some of these great questions.
Well said.
Always in that.
Speaking of that podcast, I asked you a question back then about some Starberries you were rocking about a year ago. So I was wondering if you already have the championship game day fit planned out, and you already got something in mind for the tops and the shoes. What are we thinking right now heading into championship day?
Yeah, I've got something planned out. I wish I could still rock those Starberries. I signed an endorsement deal with New Balance, so unfortunately I got to put those away in the case in my room. But love those things. Huge Knick fan. And, yeah, I got an outfit ready to go.
Excellent. So 10 minutes.
Gavin, you guys lost a nail-biter in the regular season to these guys. 13-12, you guys jumped on them early. You hold Pat Kavanaugh scoreless without a point. What matchup problems, difficulties does Kavanaugh present? And he's just this Outlaws offense as a whole. How do you game plan for so many threats?
To start, every game is different, right? I don't fall back on one game or another and think the next thing's going to happen. I prepare the same way. I mean, I'm hungry, and I know he's a competitor as well. I think he's unique because, you know, there's a few ex-attackmen in this league that out because he can do a lot. And it's more of, you know, what is he going to do against someone like me that I'm trying to watch? You know, I watch him go against a lot of different guys, and, you know, he's pulling out moves left and right that are all different. You know, the consistency within scouting him is unique because, like I said, he's got a lot of spikes. So it's kind of just expecting, you know, where are spots I want to push him to and what to expect from there. And I think that worked well in the first game. But I've got a different plan for this game. And, you know, like I said, every game's different. He's learned, I learned. He's looking forward to going at it.
I mentioned having a plan for this game. Your assistant coaches both have some big game experience on the pro level, their championship experience. What kind of wisdom have they imparted on you heading into this one? You know, just about the mindset and prepared for the game.
Respect.
They've obviously been very experienced at the pro level. However, they actually haven't provided too much wisdom. You know, I think it's just going with flow. You know, what we've got all season, stay true to, you know, who we are and our principles. So it's definitely nothing out of the ordinary that they've said or done. I think it's just, you know, same thing, consistent week over week with them, which is fair. And I think that's prepared us the best. So,
Gavin, you're one of the most fiery competitors that we've talked to on this podcast. What is your go-to pregame song that comes up?
Big Ant.
Ready
to go. Tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if it's one song, it's probably Halloween by Mike Myers. I honestly like horror music. Like, I just like music without words. I listen to rap like that. Sometimes I get a song or two in there, but it's just, there's something about that music that just calms me down and just gets me in that mode. Like, I honestly, when I walk out of the theater, it just makes me become a different player. It's just soothing. Like, I don't really know how to explain it. Like, you might think I'm psychotic saying that, but it's not too uncommon. But yeah, it's just it's really just art music because it's just beats without lyrics, and I can just think to myself without hearing any external voices.
If you said the reason was because you're going to bring the horror to your opponent, yeah, that would make sense. But it's soothing you. Yeah, that's interesting. That's some.
It's not what you.
No, we love it. Love it.
So what's kind of going on in the locker room? Like, do you have, you know, like, some headphones on and everybody else is blasting something else? Like, who controls the oxygen in the Atlas locker room? And are they kind of distracting if that's the lead you're trying to get?
Yeah, it's usually Tyler Clark. You're controlling the oxygen. He's great with it. But I take my headphones out. I love when he's playing. But I'd say a lot of guys have their headphones in, just get locked into what they're listening to, and just get ready to
stop it. Gavin, you're up for the Defenseman of the Year tonight at the end of season awards dinner. By the time this podcast, at least, we'll know if you win or not. Will you thank us in a tweet?
I mean, like, I don't focus on that stuff. I mean, my mind's been set on Sunday. I haven't won anything, you know, throughout college, throughout the practice. And, you know, once I got drafted, like, I set out, like, I want to be a winner. I need to win. It's something that's killing me inside. And anything else that comes with it, like, all the glamorous stuff, like, that's just part of the process. So I have not thought of speech, and I don't expect to win. I'm just showing up to dinner. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it's not going to change my respect him on Sunday, but right. See, maybe it's, I get up there and you guys do, if I get time to shout you guys definitely will.
Please do not. I was absolutely kidding. Gavin, thank you for joining the swinging by, and good luck on Sunday.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
We now welcome on 2024 MVP Jeff T to the show. Jeff, how are you feeling ahead of the 25 championship?
Yeah, honestly, just excited, ready to play.
Heading into this matchup, we've heard a lot about, you know, the kind of energy that both of your attack line has been bringing to the table this season. What is something that you could tell us just kind of about playing with those guys that maybe you've observed this year as opposed to last year, now that they're, you know, done each and every game together with them this year?
Yeah, I think our attack line is super, like, from my perspective, really easy to play with, really, really fun to play with, and, both those guys have played together for quite a while now, and I think for me, you know, being able to play off Shelly and then, you know, have Xander on the inside, it's super easy, super fun. I think, you know, a lot of our chemistry that you guys see on the field and, you know, the media and the fans see, you know, our product is a direct result of, you know, us, you know, being great friends off the field, having a lot of fun, you know, have point cards, whatever it may be, and, you know, being able to talk to, you know, make adjustments and talk whatever they're seeing is super easy, and I think it's super, you know, valuable to have that chemistry.
Jeff, we had the oldest player in the PLL on our podcast last week, Mike Manley. He matched up against you last time out when you guys played these guys. Where would you played him indoor and field, right? Where would you rank Mike in terms of your scariest defenders that you match up against? Top five? Top three? Policeman off the field?
Yeah, I mean, he's up there for sure. I'm very familiar, like, every shift in box as well. It's like he's covering the lefty, so he's out there, and then obviously here, so pretty familiar with them, obviously, and yeah, another matchup. And it's funny, we were talking about, like, only playing, you know, the Western teams as an Eastern team once a year, depending on, you know, how far you make it in the championships, as opposed to, like, playing the Eastern Conference guys, like, twice a year, and then again, possibly three times, like, water guys. So, yeah, not as much playing against them in the PL as indoor, but, yeah, I think it, you know, stays the same in terms of intensity every time we play against each other.
You just mentioned intensity, so I was thinking, what exactly, like, how would you describe your mindset before a game? Do you have to get calmed down? Do you have to get amped up? What is your, like, approach heading into a game?
I think it varies. I think it's part of, you know, being a professional athlete is, like, you know, finding, you know, what works for you individually and personally. Some guys get extremely jacked up, some guys gotta tone it down. I mean, sometimes it depends, right? Sometimes I'm super, energetic and ready to go. A lot of times I'm trying to, you know, stay calm as much as possible, but I think, you know, over the years kind of feeling that out and doing my best. It's not always perfect, but, and then as the game goes on, trying to make adjustments as well. So yeah, I think I've always kind of erred on the side of, you know, being calm and, you know, staying in the moment as best as possible, but I mean, every game is a little different. I'll be honest.
Jeff, staying calm, we never have seen it out of you. You're always cramping up. I do want to switch gears for a hot set here. You're a Hill Academy product. You coach with and under Brody Merrill. You're taking the head coach reins at your alma mater here. What is this promotion and role change mean for you, and how excited are you to embrace it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited. I think, you know, we got a great group of kids at the school, and it's a huge privilege just to, you know, be around them, coach them, you know, help them out whenever they need to, just kind of be that, you know, that hand on the back, a little gentle push whenever they need to. But they're smart, they're easy to coach, and I think for me, it's just, you know, something I've always, you know, when I was there playing, it's a place where, you know, I think it can, you know, truly, you know change it for the best. And, obviously, you learn everything from Patrick and Brody Merrill. I think the best ever play, and you know, the best ever coach as well. I don't know, you know, a lot of people have been coached by him, but I've had the privilege to. So honestly, everything I've kind of learned in terms of, you know, demeanor, coaching, playing, a lot of that stuff comes, you know, directly from him. So super thankful.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you, because in my opinion, you were part of what I would say is easily one of the greatest cross commercials of all time, Courier Brothers. So just what was your approach to that from the acting standpoint? How did you feel when you first saw the script treatment? How did you react to being called a turd several times over by the couriers?
Yeah, that was that was fun. My short stint, that they haven't brought me back, I don't know why. Those guys are great. It was a lot of fun. And again, it's super easy to hang out with those guys. So.
Jeff, give us one key for the championship game that you and your team are focusing on against the Denver Owls.
Yeah, I think for us it's going to be, you know, doing our best to control transition kind of both ways. I think you know, they're an extremely fast team, and they get up real quick, and you know, they're very successful in that part of the game. And I think so are we on the other end, you know in our offensive transition too. So being able to control the tempo and doing our best to kind of manage that throughout the game, I think it's going to be pretty key.
Jeff, thanks for stopping by, and good luck in the championship.
Thank you.
We now welcome first round draft pick, rookie midfielder, Matty Trainer. Matt, welcome to the show.
Excited to be here.
Title game coming up. By the time listeners hear this, it'll be 24 hours out, Matt. How are the nerves? How are you feeling?
I think we're ready to go. I mean, it's just another game. We're not going to change anything up now just because it's a championship game. I think we're in a really good spot, and just super confident in all the guys that are on our team. So I'm just super excited to get going.
So you joined the Atlas lineup with a lot of established vets, a lot of awards handed out to them. What did you feel was kind of the key to fitting in and not being too nervous or overwhelmed by that kind of lineup?
I think it's when you're playing in the PLL, you're playing with the best players in the world. That's a fact. And when you're playing with the best players in the world, it invites a lot of opportunity in your game. So I know when I was at Penn State, I had more of the eyes on me when we were playing certain teams. But now in the PLL, everyone's so good, so they got to account for those guys like Jeff and guys like Shelly, who are the best feeders in the world. You can't complain playing with those guys. It just makes the game so easy. The game comes so easy to them, and it just helps out playing on the field with those guys.
How have you found that transition, Matt? Because, you know, you take your team to the Final Four, your final college run, and you step into this team, like you said, with some very unselfish passers in Shelly and T. You come in here, what is it, week three in Villanova, you're throwing these crazy behind-the-backs down the alley. I can't stop watching that video. Can we expect some of the same highlights on Sunday? And what's it like playing with passers like those two?
Yeah, I mean, for the behind-the-back question, it's a time and place for everything. So maybe if the opportunity presents itself and there's a low shot clock, or like I said, some opportunity presents itself, maybe you can see something. But just back to Shelly and Teed, I mean, it's so easy playing with those guys. They can feed their matchup, so the defense has to slough in, but they can also find anyone, whenever. Their head is always up. So if you get open and you flash your stick, you know it's going to be right on your ear, and it just makes it so easy.
So obviously you said yes, time and place for everything. Has there ever been a point during your lacrosse career, in college or high school or something, where you did call a shot just because you felt like throwing it?
I know what one he's thinking of.
Yeah.
This crowd's giving us a little bit of chirping. Here's something to shut them up.
Yeah, 100%. I think with those
Navy Stadium.
Yeah, with those great moments comes a lot of times where you're messing up and you're learning. So there's definitely been moments like that.
Superman Matt Trainer. Hopefully we see him here at in beautiful Harris, New Jersey. Now Matt, the Outlaws, pretty good. They're a very good team. You guys had a early lead against these guys in the first half. What's going to take on Sunday to finish the job?
I think if we play our best across and put a full game together, then we'll be fine. But one of the big things that we've talked about is just trying to eliminate the transition goals. They have a lot of really athletic midfielders, just guys right in the middle of the field that can get the job done on offense and defense. So it'll be important to stop that transition.
Now, as far as heading into this game, do you have any sort of, you know, high-level superstitions? Do you want to keep anything you want to change or bring to the table heading into this particular matchup you want to kind of emphasize?
No, I tend to just fall back on training and fundamentals and what I know, and when we come into these games, I try not to change too much because we got here, our team got here for a reason. So we're just going to keep that going and try to finish the job.
Matt, we learned your teammate Gavin Adler listens to horror music to soothe him in before games. What is your go-to pregame music to be
amped up? I'm a big fan of Gunna and Drake. I also love Chris Stapleton, Riley Green, and I also love EDM, so I'm just a big music guy in general. But you usually have to throw on something chill.
You can only pick one song for Sunday. You have to listen on loop. What would that song be?
I'd probably go Sheep by Mount Joy.
Ooh, love it. Baltimore and me.
Love it.
Matt, thank you for stopping by the show, and good luck on Sunday.
Of course. Pleasure.
We now welcome on Reed Bowering, the midfielder for the New York Atlas, to the show. Reed, welcome, and how are you feeling for Sunday?
Feeling good. Feeling really excited. Just watching the game from last night. Just super, super pumped, honestly. So can't wait for Sunday.
So, Reed, you've had a really strong season, especially seeing more and more they're incorporating you into the scoring side of the offense. What would you say has been the key to kind of cash in on more of those opportunities?
Yeah, I think just more games played with this group, just felt more familiar with the guys, maybe like a little bit more trust both ways, which just comes from time from playing together. So I think maybe 5 games in, you just feel a little more comfortable, and I think it showed on the stat sheet and on the games.
And it showed with, 2 straight BTBs against these guys the last time you played Denver. How do you describe when you catch it in tight like that? How quick you're making that decision to go behind the back, or you're just trying to get pucks on net a little bit?
It's kind of based off just, like, where I can feel a good like follow through. So like if I don't have anything like normal, I'm not gonna throw it back in for no reason. So like if I feel like kind of covered on my front, or I got just such a bad angle, then I'll throw it behind the back, no problem, without hesitation. Way better than putting in my right hand. So yeah, definitely.
Canadian offhand.
Yeah, exactly.
Now to that point, have you ever thrown a backhand for no reason?
I don't think, not in a real game that mattered. Maybe some practice ones for sure, but no. I like to keep it, I had coaches growing up who would, rip me apart if I did that. So they kind of weeded that out of me for sure.
Well, your Drexel coach Tucker Durkin maybe ripping you apart, the old Atlas lore, of course.
Yeah.
Now, Reed, you have title game experience. This is the first title game for this franchise. What have you told your teammates about what it's like to play in a PLL championship?
I mean, I haven't told too much. Like, I know like this is their first, but we got a lot of seasoned vets on this team who I think are more than ready and hungry, and obviously made it to the semis last year and got that taste of the playoff lacrosse, and I think learned a lot from that, as you saw in our last semis, and I think that these guys are just going to be ready to go, and like, they're champions at all different levels too, so I think that's all good. Like, we got Hugh, who just won one, Trev in college, right? Like, all these guys. So I think it's everyone's going to be ready to go and hungry.
Now, it being, a multiple appearance for you, do you feel a little bit different heading into this one? How are the, how are the nerves, how's the preparation different this time?
Yeah, well, it's super different, because last time was, like, bizarre how it all unfolded, that being, like, my first game ever. So I kind of feel a little bit more, I guess you could say, comfortable, because again, I've been playing with these guys, which is awesome, and getting some more like minutes and all that. So I feel the same excitement and nerves, but also like just a little bit more comfortable. And again, it being the second time helps too. So just confident and excited.
Reed, we've been asking your teammates here, what's their favorite pregame music? Mm. What song are you going with to get amped before a game?
I like Santa's Rose by Drake. You know that one?
Ready?
That one or no?
No.
take a listen. That's a good pump up for sure.
We're going to play it. We're going to edit in this podcast,
okay, there
this
we go.
Part, and it'll probably be taken down for a copyright.
Maybe.
But
No, that's my go-to on the bus, for sure. Absolutely.
Reed, thank you for stopping by, and good luck on Sunday.
No worries. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys.
We now welcome on Atlas rookie midfielder Hugh Kelleher to the show. Hugh, welcome, and how are you feeling for Sunday?
Thank you. Feeling great. Excited to get out there and play Sunday. Got two had practice this morning. Looking forward to another good practice tomorrow. Be ready to go.
You bring the football grit to a team that's coached by a football-like coach in Mike Fruster. You bring the championship pedigree after your Cornell title win. Congrats there. How are you feeling from a physical standpoint going after that growing season, and also just how fired up are you to maybe make it two championships in the calendar year?
Yeah, definitely a special opportunity to win two championships in 1 year. Got a great group of guys. They really welcomed me in right away. And it's like offensively, I feel like we have a similar culture where we're all pretty unselfish. Like everyone's moving the ball. So very easy to play with guys like Jeff, Connor, Xander, and all the midfielders. It makes it super easy to find a role and take good shots and know when to go, when not to go. So that's been great, and meshing with those guys. And then feeling good. It was definitely a long Cornell season and going straight into this. But I didn't play the first two games, so I had a good break there. So I'm feeling good, ready to roll for Sunday, and excited to get on the field.
It is pretty unfair for you to go from that big red offense to this loaded pro offense. Yeah. I mean, every pro offense is pretty loaded, but you go from CJ Goldstein and Mikey and all the depth you had there coming out of the box to this. That's
it is really special. I mean, at the college level, like, we had the best offense, in my opinion, and then going into Atlas, and I think we got the best offense again. There are not a lot of changes. Like, when you're playing top-level players, like as you just said, CJ, Mikey Long, Ryan Goldstein, then we're going to play with these guys on attack, Jeff, Connor, Xander. I mean, like, it's pretty special to be with those guys and be a midfielder in parts of those groups, because they attract so much attention, and then it gives you more opportunities to make a play as well.
Yeah.
So, it's been contributing to a lot of success. So.
Let me push back on that. I don't want to call the mic here too much, Rosie, but watching a lot of club lacrosse over the summer, midfielders do not know when to pass it through X. How do you find that balance in the pro game, and how does it differ from maybe playing with Mikey and Goldstein at the college level? When you kind of pick your spots and take a shot down the alley and you want to get involved in the game, right?
Yeah.
Versus, hey, let's keep the offense moving and flowing on through X or what have you.
Yeah, so, I mean, my career, I've kind of had the same role throughout. So I'm like that last guy out of the box, like initiating the offense. So my job is to draw that slide right off the beginning. And honestly, in most offenses, and even in club lacrosse, to college, you're not going to really score off that first goal. Like, defenses are good enough. They're going to slide to you, and they're going to have to move it. And when you move it, that creates the offense. So
unless you're Penn State in the center.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, but when you have guys like CJ Gerst, Goldstein, Mikey Long down low, those opportunities do come from the midfield. But in most cases, like, they're going to slide to you. But after that, when an attackman draws a slide, they move it up top and it comes back to you, then it's a good opportunity to go when the defense is already moving and they're going to have to recover and slide again. Like, just finding those spots, especially with the amount of tension everyone else draws on the field. It's quick, 32-second shot clock and 52 seconds.
Yeah.
We have to start the offense quick and get to the goal fast. So that's been the real biggest difference for me. But, it's not too different. And good at finding my role in the offense.
Now, I wanted to ask you about being a rookie in the PLL. Were there any players who you have, since gone against or played with that you were, say, years ago rooting for or a fan of growing up?
I mean, when I was getting recruited to Cornell, I was constantly watching Jeff play and running the Cornell offense, so it's very special to be playing with him again. And, of course, Gavin Adler, he's one of my best friends from Cornell, and the opportunity to join up with him, he was pumped, and honestly, it contributed a decent amount to him for getting me drafted to the Atlas as well.
Let's go.
So he was in Coach Presser's ear a bit about me, and I'm glad to be on this team. I was hoping to be a part of the Alice, and when Coach Presser called, I was super excited. So playing with Gavin again is super special. Going up against Matty Traynor in the semifinals, and he beat us at Penn State a few times. So being a teammate with him is awesome. Going up against Max Kresge at Yale, John back and forth with him, and now I got a room with him. So.
Oh man, your boy CJ was giving it to him.
I know. Yeah, he was. I'm like, I swear, Kresge's a great guy. But first thing I said to Kresge was like, man, I hated you on the field. And he was like, yeah, I hated you too. He's like, all right, now we can be friends.
Does anyone talk more crap than Yale players?
Honestly, I don't think so. I put them up there with anyone. Yeah, for sure.
How aware are you of your boy Gavin's pregame listening routine?
I've been aware of it. I was surprised that he shared it. It is insane. But I remember it was like with him doing a workout, he was playing music on the speaker, and then all I hear is like the Halloween theme song come on. It's like, dun-dun. I'm like, what is this song?
Soothing. Like, yeah. Soothing.
It's like, and if you see him pregame, you know he's listening to something crazy. He's just so dialed in, ready to roll. But it was funny. And I'm glad he shared that with you guys because it is hilarious.
Do you have a favorite go-to?
I'm pretty basic. It's like Future. Old Drake, maybe a little bit of Lil Uzi Vert in there, and then we're good to go.
Hey, if it works, it works.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of pregame approaches, we spoke to your teammate Jeff a moment ago. He said it kind of varies game by game. Sometimes you're real hyped up, sometimes you're relaxed. Is that in fact true, or was he being diplomatic? Do you ever see hyped up Jeff T?
I think, honestly, Jeff, I feel like it's all internal. So it's like it is tough to tell. So like he could be hyped up and like ready to roll, but like you wouldn't be able to tell him. He has that straight face look to him, which is nice to have like of a captain of your team. Like he looks controlled and ready to roll at all times. And he's very relaxed. So he's like, you want that out of a guy. Just be relaxed in the moment. And, like look like he's pretty confident in what he's doing. So yeah.
You guys played the Denver Outlaws at their house to one goal game. A game that you guys had a 9-4 lead at half. What did you take from that game that you'll bring to the title game? And anything that they threw at you defensively stand out to you?
I actually didn't play in that game. So, yeah, I was out. But, I mean, just the continuation of being unselfish, playing team ball, and then also it's like they have a lot of skilled defensive midfielders and long sticks, so getting back in transition is going to be a big thing for us. So, just taking it possession by possession with, like, we say at a Cornell, like, game-to-one mentality is, like, we score, good. Like, let's get the next one, make the next play. So just taking it one goal at a time, one possession at a time, and playing like that, I think we'll be successful.
Last one for me. What has kind of been the key heading into this weekend's matchup to making it feel like just another game for you? Or is that possible at all?
You're going to get that like championship feel to this game, but just staying in the moment. It's like worrying about one thing at a time. Don't stress about the game coming on Sunday. Worry about that we got practice tomorrow. We got to have a good practice first, and then we'd like to say at Cornell a famous quote before our 2022 championship game by Dom Dory. He was like, somebody asked him in the hotel elevator, he's like, oh, are you excited for the game today? Like, what do you think? He's like, I don't know. Got to eat breakfast first. So it's became a pretty iconic quote with Cornell lacrosse. So that'll be my answer to that. Got to eat breakfast first. Can't worry about it yet.
What's for breakfast?
Probably eggs, bacon, toast.
Breakfast of champions. Good luck to you on Sunday, Hugh, and thanks so much for stopping by here.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We now welcome on Denver Outlaws defenseman Jesse Bernhardt. Jesse, thanks for joining the show, and how are you feeling for Sunday?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime I can be with this group of guys, I'm super excited. So, we're just the whole goal was to be here at the end of the year. Otherwise, you don't have a chance to win this whole thing. So, just excited to kind of have another opportunity to be together.
Out of all the teams you've been on, you've been on Team USA gold medal winning rosters, very talented Maryland Terrapin teams, very talented MLL squads. What sets this team apart in your mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely something that stands out for me with this group, you know, amongst any of the great teams I've been a part of, like you named. I think it's just the connection amongst the group. You know, all those teams over the USA or, you know, back in Maryland or, you know, whenever it may have been, I think, obviously, you've had a lot of talented guys in those locker rooms. But obviously, talent doesn't just win you championships. So this group, I think, you know, we have a lot of talented guys, as everyone's been able to see, but we also just have a lot of great guys in the locker room. And I think the ability for us to kind of combine the talent with a bunch of good dudes and guys that just have really vibed and connected really well is, you know, really set us on this journey to kind of be where we are right now.
Once again, being on a big stage for a game like this, would you say there are certain keys to not letting the moment get too big for you, or is that just kind of a thing that, you know, some people have and some people don't?
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, you're playing for a championship. So we have a lot of guys who've played at a really high level and probably have played in some kind of championship, I'm sure, in their career, whether it's, you know, playing pro or playing in a conference tournament or for a national championship, you know, at a variety of different levels. So, you know, whether they're old guys like Mike Manley or, you know, young guys, you know, like Pat Cav, like they've all been, you know, in kind of pressure situations, if you want to call them. And I think, you know, there's definitely a little bit of a different layer to it. I always kind of equate it to like playoff hockey, you know, in a sense where in a regular season game, and you know, the first month of the season, guys might be dropping gloves and, you know, getting after it. But once you get to kind of play for the Stanley Cup, you know, you don't see guys doing that just because you kind of hurt the team more than you help them. So I think there's just a little bit of a different mental approach to it. And, you know, you're just trying to make sure, you know, you're kind of not having self-inflicted wounds and learning from all those past experiences kind of up to this point.
Jesse, can you describe how special it's been to play with Jared for the first time this season?
Yeah, it's been great. It really has. Obviously, you know, we're brothers, so I'm sure we have our moments, but, you know, we're 7 years difference in age, so been around each other a lot, probably more kind of coaching and playing than obviously ever being on the same team. So it's just been, it's nice just to kind of be able to be around each other, you know, off the field, in the hotel, you know, going to and from, grabbing something to eat. But obviously, like everybody else, I know the talent he is, so the ability to just have him be on my team and not have to worry about trying to stop him or try to cover him myself is something that it's been great. So I think just to have the ability kind of him coming into this as a career, me, you know, probably on the more tail end of my career, is something that I definitely, you know, definitely cherish for sure.
And now, you know, your brother arrives this year, free agency sort of situation. How did you describe to him what kind of atmosphere your team provided, what kind of locker room it was and everything like that before he actually settled in?
Yeah, I think, you know, a big part of this was obviously the whole hype around him choosing a team. And no different than the way I recruit guys in my job. I don't really try to sell them on anything. I just kind of tell them, listen, this is what we're about. You know, these are what the people are like. This is kind of how we go about our business. And if that jives with what you're looking for, then it's going to be a good fit. And I think for us, you know, I think it starts at the top. I've been playing for Coach Sudo and Monty for, you know, my whole PLL career. And just good guys, you know, salt of the earth, you know, just really care about us as people, and obviously kind of are great at building a team, and then trickling down into the guys in the locker room, having a lot of Maryland guys, there's a familiarity there, but even the guys that aren't Maryland guys that I've been able to get to know over the years, like the Ryan Tarafenkos, you know, for example, who are just like hardworking, gritty, competitive guys, you know, no ego. So I think just kind of describing that about our group, I think, was definitely a big sell. I know those are things that Jared looks for, you know, in any team he's been a part of, and when he's ever been able to have a choice to choose to Ferris State, you know, in terms of football, a lot of common qualities that I think we were able to kind of provide that he wanted in the squad.
Jesse, you mentioned the joy of not having a game plan against your brother. You're going up against a three-pronged attack here that presents plenty of challenges themselves. You're a mastermind of some of the great Maryland schematic defenses of the college level. Just how do you size up the challenge a Dixon team and Shelley attack line poses for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, definitely when you say those names and on paper, it's definitely intimidating for sure. You know, Coach Monty does a great job every week preparing us, film, scout, all of those things. So it is nice to sometimes take a little bit of a backseat and just be the player and be on the other side of the fence, which I do enjoy. But, you know, those guys are obviously talented at what they do. And especially with Teat and Shelly, you know, to have two distributors at such a high level, to have them on the same team is just kind of a crazy thought. And then you know, kind of parlay that with having a guy like Dixon who is just so good at what he does, you know, and I think it's a great message to any young kid, right, playing. It's like you don't have to be a ball-dominant guy to have success at the highest level, and Xander has done a great job of kind of knowing his role and knows the game really well, and obviously between him and Schellenberger, they've been playing together for a long time, so they kind of think and see what's going to happen before it happens, and then Teat just can kind of do that for everybody. So, you know, they're a talented group, and you know, but at the same time, I think hopefully, you know, with the experience we have on our defense, and you know, we have some talented guys as well, it should make for an exciting matchup.
So very talented guys. So I just wanted to ask you, JT and Mike, how would you describe what they each bring to the table surrounding you?
Yeah, I know, you know, we've been playing together for a couple years now, which is crazy to kind of reflect back and think, obviously, just when JT kind of got into the PLL, and I know he kind of missed a little time with an injury, but you know, JT just kind of carries himself with you know, a lot of quiet confidence. He's obviously uber talented and gifted in things that I couldn't even imagine doing. So you know, his ability to just have that presence of covering, you know, a really high-end Dodger, and then obviously a guy like Mike who's much more vocal than JT, you know, he kind of just has an intensity and energy about him, and I think, you know, that's allowed him to kind of play in this career as long as he had, and, you know, he definitely doesn't shy away from the physicality, which everyone kind of knows, and then I just try to be kind of that glue guy, just kind of try to bring them all together, so I think between the three of us, I think we really balance each other well. I think we all kind of have our things that we're probably good at, and that's kind of what makes any unit or team great. You know, you have other people around you that kind of make up for some weaknesses, and that's really what formulates kind of that strong bond.
Jesse, I've asked you at a couple different junctures this season just what it's like to play with Logan McNaney from your 6 years of coaching him in College Park. Four national championship games he makes it to as the starter for you guys with Maryland. Just, well, what's it like from the regular season? I'll joke and he can start yelling at you now, very funny, but that championship experience, it means something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, for him, he's, you know, in college he was a vet. Obviously he's a rookie on paper in this league, but in terms of experience for playing in high-level games, again, you could put him up there against anyone, and I think what probably has been already heard ad nauseum about him, but it's so true, and that's why it gets repeated, is he's just the same guy all the time. You know, whether it's the first practice of the year, you know, to going out on Sunday, like, he just never changes who he is, and it's a good thing, and I laugh as I'm saying that just because he's Logan. He just kind of does what he does. You know, he's a goalie, so he has his quirks like any other goalie, but he's just uber consistent and in a position where you arguably could fail as much as you succeed. I mean, if you save the ball at somewhere in the 50s, like, you're probably really good, you know what I mean? You're a first-team All-American possibly, or you're an All-Pro, so 45 or almost 50% of the time you fail, you let the ball go in. So the ability to have those opportunities but not really be phased at it, I think that's what's kind of set him on this, you know, trajectory, obviously, to be one of the top guys in this league. And I think guys quickly just gravitate towards him because he just kind of has that, for a little guy, he's got a big vibe about him that just kind of puts a calming presence around you when you're out there. And to have that in a goalie, that confidence definitely kind of permeates to everybody that's playing in front of him.
I always want to ask people who are leaders or captains on the field how they end up finding themselves in that role. Is that something that you've always kind of had throughout like your childhood? Did you kind of always want to be a leader, or is it something that kind of found you?
I think a little bit of both. You know, I'm probably more, I mean, as I've gotten older, I've probably got more vocal. Some of that's required to coach, but you know, probably more of a guy that just kind of went about his business. I'd say more of like a lead by example guy. And sometimes, you know, in the younger age, the guys who just kind of do that tend to rise to the top of being the leader or a captain. But I think as you get older, that gets, you know, a little bit more challenging. And then you walk into a locker room where, you know, you have a lot of guys that are made up of a lot of those same things. So I don't think it's about, you know, trying to, you know, make a concerted effort like I want to be the captain. I think it's more about, you know, this is what the team needs, so this is what I'm going to bring. And sometimes that just happens to be the role that we fall into. But I think the part about that is like, you know, being a captain is just like a title, and you don't have to be a great leader to have a title. So it's just kind of operating in what terms of I believe in and what I think, you know, the group needs at that time. And sometimes that's propelled me to kind of have the great honor of being a captain for some of the teams I've been on. But I think it's something that, you know, it's, sometimes you just got to make a concerted effort to kind of lead, because it's not an easy thing to do. You know, not everybody wants that. Some guys like to kind of be in the shadows, and that's okay. But I do think if you want to be a strong leader, you know, you definitely have to kind of look for opportunities and kind of maybe sometimes step out of your comfort zone, just because it's an uncommon thing.
It's in the genes. It's coaching in the blood, but with you guys, right? Jared taking that job with the Florida Women's Lacrosse Program. Just from what age do you think, maybe not realize you're going to coach, but you think, hey, maybe I'd be good at this too?
Yeah, I'm not sure about when I thought I'd be good at it. I think, you know, probably the easier is just like, I don't know even when I knew that's what I wanted to do, but as long as I can remember, it's what I wanted to do. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'm going through the recruiting process with kids right now, and you ask them all, yo, what do you want to study? What do you want to be? And a lot of times they're just giving you an answer because they're trying to be nice. And, you know, I can confidently say that before I even went to college, I already knew I wanted to be a coach. Growing up with my dad being a football coach, being a teacher kind of first and foremost, it was something that I think was just kind of ingrained in us. I saw the great experiences he was able to have being around a locker room, and teams just jived with, you know, me. And it was something like, man, like I really could just pinpoint that's what I wanted to do. At what level, for what sport? I'll be honest, I didn't know at the time. I just knew I wanted to coach. It's really, I think, just at the core, and by happenstance, you know, my Jake and Jared were all kind of doing it now, so I guess you could say it kind of, you know, runs in the blood. But I think that's, you know, got to be a lot to do with obviously our dad, and you know, seeing the positive experiences he kind of had out of it, and that kind of permeated into our lives, and we just wanted to be able to kind of replicate that, you know, for other guys and to be able to coach them up.
Can you just speak on that a little more? Just a lesson or two that sticks out from growing up and learning from your dad?
Yeah, I mean, one, I think it's just the tough love, that's for sure. You know, I think sometimes there's not enough of that these days. So, you know, the ability to, you know, have tough love, but just kind of discipline, accountability is something we definitely learned in the Bernhardt household, which has kind of helped a lot in terms of our playing careers and the successes we've had. And then I think just the relationship piece, you know, I think that's been a huge one. Obviously, I think we're going on 6 years since my dad passed, and you know, when that happened, the ability to just see the people coming out of the woodwork to, you know, obviously give their support, send their thoughts and prayers, and you know, people that myself and my brothers just never even met, and then you're like, these people are coming up to you and they're 40-year-old guys and they're like, you know, your dad changed my life and, you know, affected me in this way, and I can't imagine what I'd be doing if I never interacted with him. And you're like, wow, it's a great reminder of, you know, what I'm doing is, you know, a big deal, and I don't take it lightly, and I don't think Jake or Jared do the same way. And I think it just is that reassurance of like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, the impact people's lives, you know, on, but even more important, off of the lacrosse field, you know, or for whatever the environment is at that point. I think it's something that, you know, we definitely, you know, take great responsibility in.
Jesse, you're the man. Thanks for stopping by, and good luck on Sunday.
Yeah, appreciate it. Go Terps.
We are now welcomed by Denver Outlaws rookie goalie, Logan McNeeney. Logan, welcome to the show, and how are you feeling ahead of Sunday's championship?
Yeah, feeling great. Got a week off, some good downtime and stuff like that, but obviously super excited to be back in this week, like every weekend. Just obviously super excited for the opportunity to be able to win championship weekend, I guess, again.
You're no stranger to the championships here. You're former defenseman, current defenseman Jesse Bernhardt on. Praise me, your even keel personality. How do you stay so even throughout your whole life?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of started, maybe in high school, early college, just understanding, life's going to go through ups and downs. And it happens in the sport of lacrosse, it happens in any sport. Especially, when I had those injuries as well, obviously had to take time off from playing the sport I love. And, just understanding that, being able to play is a privilege. And, nothing's ever too bad, nothing's ever too good. And, I try to do that with everything I do, whether it's lacrosse, life, stuff like that. So that's kind of how I carry myself, and I think it helps a lot as a goalie, especially because you don't want to get heated, you get scored on, you don't want to have too much confidence, and then you get pumped because that always sucks. But obviously, just trying to do that throughout every aspect of my life helps.
I want to ask you the flip side of that. Is there a player on your team, if you have to pick one, who is the furthest opposite of that? Like, you were like, wow, this guy is amped all the time. How does he do it?
Jesse Bernhardt at times. but for the most part, he draws it back. He knows the line. Obviously, as a coach, he's pretty adamant about stuff. And, I think he does it the right way. There's obviously a fine line of going overboard, but he knows the line. It's got to be him, to be honest. Everyone's pretty, everyone doesn't go crazy and stuff like that. No one's, too aggressive or stuff like that. But, you have Manley. He's a guy that always has your back. And every other guy does, too, on the team. But I think him specifically is a guy that has your back no matter what happens. And, he gets in fights and stuff. But, he's just trying to protect the guys. And, obviously, with his line of work, he has to have some of that. So he's also a guy that, it's always the defenders. But, they need some of that. But they understand when they know how to control it.
One guy who always plays like it, right? Ryan Tarafanko, we just had on the show. How would you describe Terry's aux ability in the locker room?
Oh, it's amazing. I've been very impressed. It's hard to, motivate through music. 22 guys, 19 guys. Obviously, it's great. Pumps me up. A lot of EDM, a lot of rock, and that's kind of what I listen to. I listen to a lot of country, and I listen to a lot of rap. We'll mix some of that in there, but a lot of rock, EDM, it does the job for me, so.
It's an effective build-up?
It is. It's great, yeah. It works well, and it's, it's been giving us some success. It's fun.
I want to ask you about the name Logan. Obviously, representation matters. When you were a young kid, did you take a liking to Wolverine because you had the name Logan more than other superheroes?
No, it's funny. No, actually. I didn't really know his name was Logan until probably 5 years ago. which is funny. Growing up, I didn't watch a lot of superhero movies, but I like to watch him more now. He's a beast, obviously. I don't know the whole backstory with him, but, he's an animal.
Well, backstory, you do know about the nickname of the other Logan on your team, Groot, the College Park days. Describe for the listeners who may not know the origin story of Groot.
Logan, he's quiet. He's quiet-natured. Obviously, like Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy. But he packs a punch, and, he does what he needs to do. And he kind of leads by example, and I don't want to, compare them too much just because, it's a little different. But I think for him, You know, he leads by example. He doesn't need to say much, but when he does say something, people listen. And I think that's a pretty special thing that he's been able to do throughout his college career when I played mostly with him. But it's pretty cool seeing how different people lead. Like, he's a guy that doesn't need to talk out, you know, be the hoorah guy. But, you know, he can be vocal on the field, which, you know, he's a guy that can kind of turn a switch on the field and, you know, be that guy.
Do you think that's increased since he's gone into coaching a little bit? Now
I could have. But I think even in college, I started, once I kind of like, you know, tried to, you know, see the big picture of things, you know, noticing things that I wouldn't really notice as a younger kid at Maryland.
Right.
I started to realize, like, he does kind of help direct the offense. I'm not really too sure about how, because it's kind of, it's too hard when you only practice once or twice a weekend.
Yeah.
But he was a guy at Maryland that would really direct the offense. And, you know, it's pretty cool seeing that, because, like, off the field, he doesn't say much. But, you know, when he does say something, you listen to him.
100%. Don't want to make this a full Terrapin interview here, Rosie, so stop me. But, exactly, you got a lot of Terps on the team. You were part of that 2022 National Championship, historic undefeated team. Do you see some similarities? I asked this to Don Phil, kind of how unselfish that team was, to kind of how unselfish this team is playing, and, you know, the same pieces with you and Luke down the middle.
Yeah, I think, you know, that during that season, obviously you can chalk it up to a lot of different things, but you know, we went through struggles. I mean, it's hard to compare, because, like, that group we had that year went through awful. Like, obviously COVID, it affected everybody, mostly bad, some good maybe. Hopefully you can find some good in that whole time period. But
the way that 21 season ended.
Exactly. Like, we obviously lost the championship. It was a heartbreaker. We wanted to, you know, finish it out, especially with a year like that where we couldn't even see our families. But we went through all that pain together. We had a very similar team the next year. And I think, you know, just off the field, everybody was so connected. Everyone was, you know, destined for the same goal. And that's where I see a lot of similarities with this group, is where, you know, everybody's super close off the field. And, you know, it's hard because guys are living in different places. But whenever we do see each other, it's like we haven't skipped a beat. And we were, you know, after our last regular season game, we were off for 4 weeks. And, you know, we had those first couple practices back in Philly during the quarterfinals, and we didn't even skip a beat. We had great practices. We were making jokes like we would make jokes if we were together for the whole week. So, obviously, it's super different, but, you know, the effect is becoming very similar. But, you know, I think on the field, too, it's just like guys are leading on all aspects of the field. Defensively, you know, we're a great connected unit, and I think at Maryland, that's what I was – used to. It's a very well-connected group. The offense, obviously, star power, and, you know, they're connected as well. And the combination between me and Luke, like, if I'm playing well and he's playing well, it's, you know, you're getting possessions. If I make clean saves, you're getting the offense the ball, and, you know, Luke can, you know, take shots and stuff like that. He's yet to can a couple more than he would like, but he'll keep trying. But, you know, just having all those pieces come together for the same goal is kind of what we did at Maryland too. So,
you mentioned clean saves, and I think kind of one of the hallmarks we've heard a lot about this Outlaws team this season is the clean saves and the transition game. Obviously, it's important to, you know, take plays one play at a time, not too high, not too low. But if you had to think about it, does any fast break kind of stand out to you kind of in hindsight when you're like, okay, that was a pretty sick fast break?
I think when we played the Atlas in Denver, I can't remember if it was overtime or fourth quarter. I didn't make a clean save, but they caught a ball on the crease. I made like a kick save or something like that, and the ball squirted out, and Tarafanko.
The dive?
Yeah, did the dive. Hit it over to the middle of the field. Jake picked it up and threw it to Brennan. Brennan was on his knees, got up, scored.
Yeah.
And I think that was unbelievable. That was a big juice play, especially in a crowd like that. That was so cool.
Oh, season defining, right?
Yeah, it was like, really cool.
Kind of spurred that comeback. You guys get the job done. Jared gets the OT winner, right? Like, what did you learn from that game? They
go up on you guys early. You guys are on such short rest.
Yeah.
In the altitude, yeah. Mind you, right? Yep. 11 a.m. start. Yeah, so tough. Let's keep that in context.
Yep. Yep.
But what did you learn from the first time you played these guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're obviously a great team. And I think just more for us, not them specifically, is, you know, you're kind of always in it in this league with the two-point system and you know, just like the fast-pacedness of the game where you can make a quick turn real quick. And obviously, we were down 9-5 at halftime. And the game prior to the chaos, we were up 9-5 or something like that. Mm. They came back and those were two really good learning experiences, being on both sides of, you know, losing at halftime and winning at halftime. And obviously we lost against the chaos, but I think we kind of put that excuse of, you know, of a quick turnaround. We put that to rest. And we knew we were never going to make that excuse, if whatever the outcome was.
Yeah.
And I think everybody realized that. And at halftime, we're like, all right, we just got to stay true to who we are. We're going to get it back play by play. And don't look at the big picture, just focus each play on itself. And we did that, and you know, I think it was a really good learning experience for our team. And I mean, throughout the whole season, you're down, you're up, you're coming back from losing and stuff like that. You're up at times, you're trying to hold on to the lead. So the whole season is kind of learning experience, and hopefully you learn enough to get to the point of playing in the championship, and that's what we're here for.
You're always here for.
Gosh, trying to keep it going.
I have one more for you, Logan. Just the what was I going to ask you? I think so. Yeah. What's your favorite pregame song?
It's funny. I don't really listen to music anymore. I used to. This is an interesting song choice. Have you ever watched the movie 1917? It's a movie taken in one shot. There's a song from their soundtrack that I used to listen to.
One of the scene where the guy's like running.
I think he's running. Yeah, he's running like the whole time. I don't know, just like the build up, and I don't know, it did something for me. But my favorite song is one by Metallica.
Love it.
It's pretty intense, but I love it. I used to listen to that before youth soccer game. Just in the backseat pounding.
Let's go.
My mom's like, what is wrong with him?
Do you play goalie in soccer?
Yeah, I try. Like every other kid, you played it.
You play like every position, yeah.
Yeah. Hockey, I played goalie for a year. I was better at skating. Better at playing out, so.
Yeah, totally. What are you, last question for you. You're an econ major.
Yeah.
Well, what's the off-the-field situation looking like? How's the job market looking?
Well, honestly, for an economist, right outside of graduation, it wasn't great. I didn't really work that hard, but from what I heard.
You've been busy.
I've been busy, you know, trying to do my thing. I haven't had a break in a long time. So,
yeah.
You know, having injuries, having to do PT throughout the whole year, summer, winter. Not really getting breaks and stuff like that. It'd be nice to have a little bit of a break after the season. But, you know, the job market for an economist wasn't great after my graduation, but figured out.
You forecasted that. Nah, man. All kidding aside, thank you so much, and good luck on Sunday here.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Appreciate you, man. We now bring on Denver Outlaws midfielder Jonathan Donville. John, thanks for coming on the podcast here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Honored to be here.
Producer Donnie, as some fans know you, from Back of the Bird days, and as also your podcast with the one and only Dan Arestra. What advice would you give aspiring podcasters like Rosie and I? The podcast game?
I mean, the biggest thing is just to start, right? Which you guys obviously have, and you know, you guys have been doing it longer than I have, and you guys are pros, so I don't think you need my advice, but if there are aspiring people out there, you know, just start. You know, your phone can record, your laptop can record. Don't let the haters online get in your head too much, and just let it fly.
We'll take it.
Speaking of haters online, do you ever have the desire to interact with negativity you face online? If in fact you do, I can't say I've seen it, but maybe you have.
I have the desire every day. I don't think it's productive. I don't think it's a good look. And you know, on a level too, I respect everyone's right to have an opinion. Even if I disagree with it, I think there's a little bit too much snapping back against folks. I think all sports have opinions you don't agree with online, so I think you know, you got to let some of those people have it. Do I want to let some people know sometimes? Yeah, heck yeah, I do. But you know, I don't see that as my role, and I just don't think it's a good look for me personally. And that's how I'm wearing it.
John, you've got some experience with playing with Cornell on the other side of the sideline against you guys. Jeff Teed, Hugh Kelleher, we had on the pod, Gavin Adler, your former teammates. Any gamesmanship planned in the lead up, or any sirens outside of their hotel rooms or anything?
I don't think so. We're staying at the same hotel, so I hope there's no sirens. And no, it's I think something you have to kind of learn to manage in pro lacrosse. There's on other teams, there's you know, guys you played with, and there's guys I played against in some big games on my team now. So it's just kind of something you manage. And you know, I've known Jeff since I was a kid. He's one of my very good friends, and Gavin and Hugh were great teammates, great players, and guys I consider it an honor to have gotten the chance to wear the same jersey. And you know, they're here for a reason. Those guys are three big parts of that team, and they led them on and off the field like they did at Cornell, and it was an honor to play alongside them, and you know, really an honor to get to battle against them as well.
Had a weekly feature this year, and one of the elements to it, there was an award handed out from time to time, yeah, called the Jonathan Donville of the Week, given to the player who, you know, produced the most impactful pick play, something like that. Sometimes you won it. my question for you is, if somebody's kind of learning to emulate that, like, where do you think the pick setting skill set comes from? Is that something you particularly like studying from other people? How did you get to be so good at it?
To be honest, I learned how to play off ball mostly from Teeter at Cornell. That's really where I learned a lot of it. The pick stuff specifically comes from the box game, but in terms of like the rest of the off ball stuff, I was primarily an on ball player in high school and stuff like that, and a feeder, and kind of realized athletically that wasn't going to be my path at the next level. So I learned how to play from Teeter and Connor Buzik and Coach Peter Milliman when I was at Cornell. It really taught me a lot. And, you know, I think just be active. As long as you're active, you might be doing the right thing. You don't always have to be doing the right thing. You know, you'll get looks to come your way. And just recognize that that's, I think sometimes it gets looked down upon, especially maybe at the younger levels. You know, they all look the same on the scoreboard for your team and for you personally. As long as you're making an impact, you know, who cares how it comes?
Well, John, I'm really interested in your grad year at Maryland. You put together one of the best college seasons the sport's ever seen, undefeated, crushing teams left and right. Well, for my eyes, the best offense I've seen. Any similarities you see with this Denver team and how you guys move the ball with that 2022 Maryland team?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's probably similarities with a lot of the teams in the league. I think that's kind of the way the sport is going now. And, you know, everyone's playing offense like that. Obviously, the similarity for me is a big number 12 down there that I throw the ball to, and hopefully, you know, can start catching some of the more balls he throws back to me. But, yeah, I think there's similarities just in terms of, you know, just trying to continuously be attacking. And Jared obviously played in that offense before I got there, and he's had a lot of success here as well.
That's the coolest part, right? You come in, he's leaving. How cool is it just to play with him?
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool because of the Maryland stuff, but to be honest, it's just cool to see a guy that talented and that athletic. You know, you guys watch it every week. He's just a different kind of animal, and it's just been a real it's going to be cool to look back on my career and say that I played on this team, and frankly to say that I was a part of this game with the talent on both sides. I think you know, I'm just really grateful and honored to be part of this.
When you join a team like the Yellows, what would you say are the keys to quickly incorporating yourself and your style into what they already have going on?
Yeah, just be additive. Just try not to disrupt from what's going on. Just try to add what I can and take the role that's been given to me. And you know, I would love to have found the score sheet a few more times so far, but felt like I contributed to winning. And I think try to add to what's going on and try to be a plus rather than taking away from anything. And a big part of that for me is trying to get on the same page with our guys, especially the guys that have the ball a lot, and try to make sure I'm in the right place and where they want me. And communication's a big part of, I think, my games. I have to know what they want and all that sort of stuff. So, just get on the same page quickly and just add and try to do what I can to help us team win games.
Producer Donnie, any pregame music that's a go-to for you before a big game like this?
It rotates a little bit. I've been really into Dream On, Aerosmith.
Nice.
It's kind of been an up and down summer for me, so it kind of just trying to tell myself keep the dream going, and it's kind of helped get me here to this game, and this dream in front of this team is not over yet, and I got some Tragedy Hip in there too, good Canadian boy, so I'm trying to make sure there's some Canadian music in there as well.
Love it. Well, keep dreaming on, and again, thanks for joining us, and good luck on Sunday.
Yeah, thanks guys. Thanks for having me.
We're now welcomed by Denver Outlaws short sleeve defense midfielder Ryan Tarafenko. Ryan, thanks for joining us. How are you feeling for Sunday's championship day?
Feeling good, yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Ryan, your experience in the NLL, coming off a great season with Halifax, your play with your Ohio State Buckeyes, your transition game throughout these years, how have you seen it evolve? And do you feel like you're even more athletic now than you were in college?
I don't know about that, but no, I think it's my lacrosse journey has been great. I mean, I've been super grateful. I'm going on this is year five in the PLL for me, 4 years in the indoor league. Just really, really grateful. But the transition stuff for me has always been kind of like a risk-reward thing. Like, I want to put our team and offense in the best situation possible. I think that's probably the most developing I've had in that situation, where the PLL, like, you can't really afford to miss possessions and have turnovers and have those, like, risky plays not really pan out. So, when is it time to kind of go all in on it? When is it time to tone it down? When is it time to kind of just sub off and let your offense go to work? And I just think the more you play the game, like, the more you start realizing those situations. And, so I think that's probably the biggest jump I've probably made since year one.
Yeah, just sticking with the transition thing, is it all entirely something that you guys just kind of go by on a field basis? Or does the pseudo kind of tell you sometimes, let's push transition a little bit more here? You all seem to work very well together as far as pushing it up, or kind of knowing what to do. Is it all just kind of built on experience now?
Yeah, I think right now it's built on the flow of the game. I mean, how's our offense looking? How's our defense looking? What's the score? If offense is really crushing it 6-on-6, then it's, we're done with transition, getting the ball, get off the field, and give them as much time as they need. If there's some lulls or something, we need to create a quick spark, we'll be a little bit more advantageous. We'll start staying on the field a little bit more. But, it's the flow of the game. None of it's scripted. We're fortunate we got a lot of guys who can, on the defensive end, who can handle the rock and make plays, coming over the 50. Obviously, Pacino, Zach's super underrated at it. JT, I feel like, is even super underrated at it. Mike has a really great stick. So, we got a lot of guys who can step over the field and step over the 50 and make a lot of plays. So,
Ryan, who wins in the race, you or Zach?
Man, honestly, I think Zach probably has me. I would love to see that. Maybe earlier in the season next year, maybe a training camp or something, we can do something fun. But, man, that guy's first 15 steps, they look a little bit different than most, I'd have to say.
It's insane. Just the impact he's had as a free agent signing. Jake Paisano coming in a larger role after his rookie season. Describe what it's like to play with guys like that when if you get a defensive stop, you can run and do some damage in the yard.
Yeah, I'll touch on Jake first. Just what a great year for him. I think he's just way more comfortable. I think he's alluded to it in the past on other platforms. Year one, kind of coming into a different system, not knowing what to expect, not knowing, what your role really is. And then, year two, just completely blossoming into the player that we knew he was going to be. So, credit to him. And then Zach, I think that's probably the biggest biggest free agent mid or offseason signing, I would say, in the PLL. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to look
good
back.
Phrasing with that one. Yeah,
yeah.
Jared.
Yeah, well, Jared, you know, during the season, that's obviously a very big one as well. But, I mean, Zach was a defensive midfielder of the year candidate last year. I can't say enough, you know, nice things about him. He's a great dude. He does his role better than anyone else. He's an absolute stud in between the lines. He's a lockdown defenseman. And our defense, I mean, you can see this year having a guy like that, like, we've taken a great step. So, I love playing with those two, for sure.
As a Thunderbird who heads into the Outlaws season, how are you able to kind of get ready for the outdoor season just physically? Like, I imagine you're kind of going to hell by the time the outdoor game rolls around. Is there a lot of time there, or does it kind of have to sort of work your way up to being in a physically good to go?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we don't get much of a break. And I think, while I'm on here, I feel like we need to figure out a way where we can give our guys who are playing in both leagues a little bit of a break or a separation. And I'm not claiming I know the answer to do that, but it's tough because you don't get a break really. You kind of go right into the NLL, and then, you know, if you make the playoffs, you're kind of going right into training camp. I think I had 12 days off in between seasons. So those 12 days are really just dedicated to getting your body feeling as good as you can. I train year-round. I pretty much never really take much more than a couple days off. So I'm pretty much just staying in, you know, the shape I'm in for the most part. But, yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's definitely a grind. And then you go right into training camp, which is obviously a grind well. But Coach Trudeau does a great job kind of mending that to make it a little bit more manageable.
Ryan, big game Sunday. What's the go-to pre-game song, pre-game music that gets you amped up?
Well, I'm usually on the aux, believe it or not. I mean, we have a Spotify playlist that we kind of just add songs to. So I don't know if I'm not necessarily picking songs. I'm just kind of filtering through them, I would say.
You're a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
DJ.
I'm trying to, but those guys might have different opinions on how I do.
DJ Terry.
But we're going to keep it through for the end of the season. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always a big believer that, like, you got to let it build a little bit. Like, I'm already super amped up as it is, so if I'm just going in and we're crushing, you know, very high-intensity music the second we get in the locker room, I feel like it's a little bit too much. Right. So I think you got to let it build a little bit. You got to feel the room out. Start off a little slow, and then, you know, once we start getting ready to walk out, you know, we're where we need to be.
Yeah.
Now, is that a lesson learned by experience? Like, were you DJing one time and maybe peaked a little bit too early? Or, like, where do we go from a half hour to
a game? Yeah, I think.
A few unsportsmanlikes to start the game.
Well, it's just like you can only keep your intensity up for so long, right? So if it's starting an hour and a half before the game, what are you going to look like when the first whistle blows? We want to be firing at all cylinders as soon as the whistle blows to start the game. So that's just kind of – that's always been my philosophy. I'd be curious if you ever want to, you know, ask these guys low-key how I do on the aux. I'm always into feedback, so.
Listen back to this episode of the PLL Happy Hour podcast, and then we'll get those answers. Ryan, thank you again for stopping by, and good luck on Sunday here.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
We're now welcoming Dalton Young to the show. Dalton, welcome, and how are you feeling on Sunday here?
Awesome. Well, first off, thanks for having me, and super pumped. Can't wait for the game. I think we've all been looking forward to it these last 2 weeks, and just excited to finally be here.
Don, you're the top seed in the West. You guys win handily in the semifinals here. How have you been able to one, carve out a role for yourself in this offense, and two, what's it been like transitioning from, you know, being the guy at Richmond to gelling with all these kind of superstars and a loaded offense here for Denver?
Yeah, I would definitely say for me, just kind of whether week to week or whatever the situation is, just however I can best help, and with the guys we have on this team, kind of meshing to where I feel I could provide the most benefit. It's definitely been a learning curve for sure, coming from Richmond where I had the ball on my stick majority of the possessions, and it's kind of a lot of times the one we were drawing plays for, and now it's more just having a little bit less of a role, which I've honestly learned to love. of being able to rely on some of these guys and like finding my the voids and where I can fit in and make plays. And I think a lot of the support that they've given me has really propelled me and helped my confidence with just being able to be myself, make the plays that I'm used to making, and just kind of striving in this offense.
Take me back a few weeks. So you guys had this kind of gigantic probably record of just taking a whole month off from action. What was that like for you, just, you know, not being able to get out there on the field, and how did you kind of maintain the intensity so you could, you know, roll back out when it's time to go?
Yeah. I think we saw in the first half, especially on the offense, and it was definitely tough just not being around the guys, not practicing, just chemistry perspective. And it's obviously everybody's on different schedules, how often you can get out. And at the end of the day, it's impossible to replicate the speed and the intensity of us all being together, practicing at game speed, playing a game, rather than me just being at home and shooting by myself. So I think it definitely took us a half last week to kind of get the ball rolling, but we saw in the second half things started to click, especially offensively, moving the ball. So it was definitely tough, but I think it was showed kind of our resiliency of being able to really figure it out. And I think it was definitely a wake-up call for these last 2 weeks, like, hey, we really need to put a focus on it, and hopefully having the two practices will help that for this upcoming game.
Don, I gotta sneak in some Slater's questions here. First ever playoff win coming off your very foundational career, right? You kind of set the standard offensively for that program with Dan Camotti down there. Just one, how cool is it that I saw you down there in the stands supporting your teammates down there in Chapel Hill? And two, just speak on the kind of what Richmond has meant to you.
Yeah, I mean, Richmond being like one of the very few schools giving me a chance to play Division I lacrosse, and fell in love with the school as soon as I got there. And just like being able to see kind of from ground zero where it started. I mean, when I was a freshman playing with some of the first guys in the program, I think when I graduated, me and a couple other guys did some of the calculations of how many of the players in Richmond history we had played with, and it was like 80 or 85% of the guys over those 9 years.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty special. Just like when somebody said, oh, I know somebody played Richmond lacrosse, there was a high possibility that we played with them and knew them very well. So obviously following that year and being able to be at that game and the Cornell game, and honestly being on the verge of tears when they won, was pretty special. And just everything Coach Shimati's put into that program, from taking a bunch of seniors that were going to schools to be in fraternities and just be regular students, and being like, nope, like you're coming to play lacrosse for me. And these guys who had no real interest in playing college lacrosse, and turning them into winning a conference championship. And just over the years now, the kids that he's getting, the way I like to put it is, when he was recruiting our class, even 4 or 5 years into the program, we were deciding between going to Richmond and Division III schools. And not that both my brothers played Division III, like, absolutely love it, but it was just the reality. And now the kids that he's kind of getting are, these kids are making decisions between ACC, Big Ten, Ivy League, and Richmond. And I think it just speaks to him and how far he's brought along the program and everything, and it's really special.
So for some PLL fans who might not have been familiar with you from your Richmond days, who are just kind of getting to know who you are now, just a little bit about yourself. Like, if you're not playing lacrosse, what are you doing? Like, what do you love doing off the field?
Yeah, I'm definitely very friend and family oriented, so always doing things with other people. I have two brothers and a sister who I'm really close with and love spending time with them. But yeah, I mean, generally just being around other people, hanging out, it doesn't really matter. I'm very, very active, love to golf, and just working out, playing basketball, just being with other people is most important to me, I would say.
Dalton, you're a party starter for the offense, for any offense you play for. Sources tell us you're a party starter after the games, after wins. describe what you bring to the post-game scene and just how amped you are to celebrate with boys.
Yeah. I think me and Brennan go back and forth and we joke around and say, just like, play hard, like work hard and have fun after, right? And just think, for me, like, I've always wanted to be the person authentically of that, like, other people want to be around, just like treating other people well and being a good person. And but I think the connection that brings to like going out is like when we're out, just like being myself, having a good time, not caring what others think, and not in any sort of negative way, and just being like, I'm gonna go and have fun. And I think I like to think that's what kind of draws some attention of people, like, this kid, just like, he's authentic, he'll be himself, he doesn't really care what other things, likes to have fun, and it's kind of what I like to pride myself on.
Would you say that mentality carries over onto the lacrosse field? Like, would you describe yourself as more of a, like, having a good time sort of opponent, or, you know, when you're out there on the field, do you kind of want to, like, take heads off? Which kind of your approach to the game?
Yeah, I would definitely say a mix of both. I was very football oriented and driven my whole life, so I definitely have that aspect of it. I just feel like when you football has kind of its own mindset of attacking a game, like, feels like you're going to war, like you're going to battle, and kind of taking that, transitioning it to the lacrosse aspect. But I think the difference with lacrosse is having to be a little bit more methodical and understanding the game versus like, oh, I'm gonna go and run and put my head into somebody as fast as I can. So I think it's definitely a balance. I've never really been, especially in my Richmond days, I wasn't someone who was like goofing off before games. I was like kind of just like feeding myself, quiet, do my own thing, kind of getting the right mindset. And I would say it's definitely transitioned a little bit to the PLO, but I would say I'm probably a little bit more of interacting with others and not being so kind of to myself. So it's been a blast, for sure.
Dalton, keep being authentic, keep being awesome, and thanks so much for stopping by, and good luck on Sunday.
Awesome, thanks for having me, really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Dalton.
Yep, nice meeting you, thank you.